Bhagavatam. Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, text number 14. Translation. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The fortune of the earth planet is praised because of its being specifically sustained by the Lord. Its beauty is appreciated and compared to that of a lotus flower situated on the trunk of an elephant. As a lotus flower with leaves is very beautifully situated, so the world with its many beautiful mountains appeared on the tusks of the Lord Boar. Again. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusk, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. Very appropriate analogy. Lord Boar coming out of, Lord Boar coming out of the water with the earth on his tusks, as being compared to an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water with a lotus on the trunk of an elephant. So it's described here that the lotus flower with leaves. So, just as when Varaha rose up from the Gavadaka ocean with the earth nicely intact, he had not damaged it, even with his very powerful tusks or with his great power. In the same way, we can just imagine an elephant infuriated rising up out of the water and still with its trunk there is this beautiful lotus flower, all the leaves and petals all still intact. And of course, you know, elephants, they can do that. With their trunk, although it's sort of a nose and an arm and a leg, they can perform very gentle tasks, extremely gentle with their trunk. So they can quite easily hold a delicate flower, and if they want to, they, you know, won't damage it. Of course, if they want to, they'll just, with the same trunk, they can rip a tree out, a banana tree, and just smash it to pieces. Or sometimes they do that to people. They say an elephant never forgets. There are instances, I think even in Mayapur, going way, way back, there was an old lady or something, used to walk around, do a daily walk. A little old lady used to get in front of the elephant, sort of, you know. And one day he just picked her up, and it was the end of the little old lady. So, don't infuriate an elephant. But at the same time, if they want to, you know, with their trunk, they can be very, very gentle. Now, This verse, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, is praising the fortune of the earth planet. So, of course, the pastime is about Lord Varaha, but in fact, because the earth planet looks especially beautiful at this moment, we know that people travel all over the world to see beautiful mountain ranges and scenery and lakes and what have you, but nothing would ever compare to this moment, for those who had the opportunity to perceive perhaps some of the devotees and demigods in the upper planetary system seeing Varaha rising up out of the ocean with the earth in his tusks, the earth looking especially beautiful. And Prabhupada, in this regard, he quotes Chanaka Pandit. In the teachings of Queen Kunti, there's a nice verse which has a similar purport, chapter 8, verse 39, that our Queen Kunti prays when Krishna is leaving. O Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your lotus feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. So, in that purport, there's a few things I'll quote from that purport. It's very, very wonderful, and there's a lecture attached to it as well. The Prabhupada quotes Chanaka Pandit that everything looks beautiful when one is intimately related to it. So Chanaka Pandit gives the example of the sky. So the sky is always there. The sky always looks very beautiful, but on the full moon night, when the stars and very brightly shining and the full moon is there, it looks even more beautiful in relationship to the full moon and the stars. Chanaka Pandit gives another example that the state or the country looks very well if there is a good government, a Krishna conscious government. Everyone is happy, everyone is flourishing, society runs well, and of course we know that here, Queen Kunti also alludes to the fact that because Krishna was present, that the kingdom of the Pandavas flourished. There are descriptions in the first canto that the earth was producing everything, all its natural beauty and produce in abundance. And he gives another example that although girls, Prabhupada says, quoting Chanaka Pandit, he says, although girls are naturally beautiful, a girl looks especially beautiful when she has a husband. And then a final analogy, a person, however ugly, if that person is a learned scholar, they have a certain beauty as well. So Prabhupada concludes, ultimately everything will look beautiful when Krishna is present. So, but Kunti is saying, therefore if you leave, it will not look so beautiful. And Srila Prabhupada taught us that this same principle which was there 5,000 years ago, which was taught to us by great devotees like Queen Kunti, it is also applicable now. And of course, this is what we are trying to teach the world, that people of this world, this so-called modern civilization, they're always striving for perfection and to make everything wonderful and beautiful and attractive, but we know that despite all the modern advancement of civilization, if Krishna is not in the center of civilization, it will not be attractive at all. And therefore, we actually see that if we look Srila Prabhupada, he gives a positive example how that is practical now, and then he also shows where those who are not taking to Krishna consciousness, how that is affecting the nature of the world. So Prabhupada mentions that, he says, those who joined this movement were beautiful before, but now they have become Krishna conscious, they look especially beautiful. He was always very proud, he would say, you know, therefore the newspapers often describe them as bright-faced. How joyful and beautiful these boys and girls have become. That's, you know, the newspapers would, television, you know, would speak of the devotees like that. And you know, even the leaders of other religions would speak of the devotees like that, bright-faced, joyful, happy. So then, now we see those who don't take to Krishna consciousness. Now, Srila Prabhupada is describing, this is back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, and he's saying that at the present moment, the younger generation are confused and hopeless. And therefore, they appear morose and black-faced. Why? Because they're missing the point. They have no aim in life. With Krishna in the center, everything becomes beautiful. And in fact, you know, that's what we see. You know, what I've noticed with the world is when something goes wrong, people turn it into the new fashion. I notice a lot of the, you know, a lot of the men's haircuts. It's like something went terribly wrong. It's like, you know, so it's like they run out of ideas or something. You know, something went terribly wrong. You know, we had the Mohican, we had the skinhead, we had the hippies. You know, we had the short back and side, a little Elvis Presley curl at the front. What's left? Oh, I'll try this. Oh God. Okay, this is a new fashion. And, you know, the people who are very famous and leaders of the world, you know, most of them are, you know, addicted to intoxications, you know, they're their eyes become somewhat black and their faces become withdrawn. And because they're famous and they're leaders, you know, they're singing the songs, they're movie stars, people follow them. So it becomes the fashion to look like that. You know, black face, drawn, too thin, look like you're about three steps off death. You know, that's the fashion. And seriously, it's... you know, models like that, despite the fact that everyone complains, you know, a lot of models, when they, you know, walk down the catwalk, they're like sort of skeletons. You know, you wonder how they have the strength to get to the end of the catwalk and back. You know, they must be paying them a lot of money. But, so what to speak of back then, you know, now, and of course, this hopelessness. That's why you see that people take to intoxication on such a, you know, an extreme level because they're hopeless. I remember on Sankirtan, you know, this is somewhere back in the 80s. It's about 30 years ago. Your time goes, doesn't it? I went to this one house, you know, because we were doing door to door. And there was probably, you know, a dozen sort of boys and girls there, and they were just so intoxicated. And you could see that that's what they did every day. And I asked them, you know, what do? You know, you work? You know, they sort of laughed. And they were doing that day in, day out for years. And I said to them, you know, don't you want to, you know, do something a little more with your lives? And they said, what for? There's going to be a world war and everything will be finished. So that was 30 years ago, you know, that they were so convinced that there was no hope in trying to do anything that they just gave up and took to intoxication. What to speak of now? You know, now it's so much worse. And, you know, we see also in places like America, you know, just sometimes ordinary people just lose all hope. And they see no point in anything. They see no point, not in their own existence, but they see no point in anyone else living. And therefore, they get a gun and they kill as many people, you know, to make that statement. You know, just kill them all. There's no point to you living. Kill myself. There's no point to me living. And, you know, you used to hear this maybe once every 10 years. Now it's every week. Sometimes a couple of times a week. Someone just goes into school, and, you know, their work or something like that. So, you know, that sense of moroseness, confusion and hopelessness because there's no Krishna consciousness. and of course... That was one of the reasons I'd become a Hare Krishna, because I saw that, you know, even, you know, going back in the 70s, the late 70s, I perceived that in society. But I wanted to do something positive, so I became a Hare Krishna, because I found that they, you know, presented, you know, when I read the Gita, I found that they present, there was something completely positive. Everything was beautiful, everything was optimistic, everything was, you know, progressive, enthusiastic, like that, good qualities. What to speak of now? So, Srila Prabhupada mentions that this, as he says, they've lost the point, they're missing the point, they have no aim in life. He says, with Krishna in the centre, everything becomes beautiful. And Krishna can become the centre any time. He says, Krishna is always present, and if we simply have to invite him, that is Krishna consciousness. We see the prayers of Lord Brahma. He describes that, you know, for one who is, gets the blessings of Krishna and his devotees, they perceive that everything is Krishna. Krishna is within everything. Everything is his energy. He is always present. Therefore, they have no fear. One devotee in the Sri Sampradaya, he said that he was the one who, in order to save his guru, Ramanujacharya, you know, he went to see the king on his behalf, pretending to be Ramanuja, and they, you know, took out his eyes and tortured him and threw him to be killed. And anyway, by the blessings of Krishna, you know, somehow he could see. He said, I used to see in this world there was misery and suffering everywhere. He says, now, because of your mercy, you know, wherever I look, I see your mercy. Everything is blissful. Everything is wonderful like that. So that is the one who is Krishna conscious. They see Krishna is everywhere. And Prabhupada says, you know, you can, you simply have to invite him. And he gives us the clue, which may sound very hard, but this is Prabhupada, he says this prayer. My Lord, please come and be in the centre. that's a prayer. That's how difficult it is. That's expecting something more complicated. That's it. My Lord, please come and be in the centre. And of course, that's the one thing I always loved about Srila Prabhupada, is that he made, you know, something very difficult philosophically, or, you know, something very austere. He just made it very within your reach, very simple. He says that we don't say, he says, one need not stop everything one is doing. And of course, this is how we, preach to people. That one simply has to add Krishna. One of Prabhupada's favourite examples, he says, zero has no value. But if we bring the number one and place it in front of the zero becomes 10. So if you have so many different zeros and you put the one there, then you have 10, 100, 1,000, by placing Krishna. So you don't have to change, you don't have to stop everything you're doing, you don't have to give up everything material. You just add Krishna. And when Lord Brahma was describing about the glories of the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, he said, for them, there's nothing material. Because everything is being offered to Krishna. It's all, everything is in relationship to Krishna. Their home, their family, everything. All their possessions, their intelligence, their body. Everything. So therefore, everything is spiritual. So you don't have to stop everything material. It becomes spiritualized by adding Krishna. And of course, we know that when you put Krishna in the centre, naturally everything becomes purified. One wants to please Krishna, and therefore, many bad habits and sinful activities are, automatically removed as one wants to have Krishna more and more in the centre of their life. Like that, it's an automatic process. Somehow or another, Rupa Goswami says, if you can just attract people to Krishna, if you can make people attracted to Krishna, yes, I would like to think of Krishna more, somehow or another, all the rules and regulations will gradually come. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that the easiest way to think of Krishna is especially chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and associating with devotees. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam about, the Lord's Leela, as we're doing now. And worshipping the deities and Tulasi Devi. And residing in a holy dham. Or another way, there are different ways that you can reside in a holy dham. If one can't go there physically, one can also, have the dham within one's heart by always being fully Krishna conscious. These temples become like holy dharms or tirthas as well. We can come to the temple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, because he had, was always Krishna conscious in his home, that his home became transformed into Vaikuntha, Vrindavan. So these five in particular. And the Janmashtami festival, which we're doing, and of course Prabhupada's festival and Balaram's festival and Radhasthami, all these festivals, they're an opportunity for us to teach people that process. We place Krishna in the centre, and we show that it's practically unlimited. That if the whole world, just like actually on Janmashtami, Krishna is in the centre all over the world. And Prabhupada mentions that when we celebrate, Janmashtami, and when Janmashtami, because Janmashtami appears in some universe, and every year after that is celebrated, that means it's being celebrated in some universe. It's like, so it's actually, cyclic. The Janmashtami celebration is practically like an eternal celebration as well. It never stops. Somewhere, so even though we may say, oh, Janmashtami is finished, we'll wait another year. But actually in some universe, Janmashtami is going on. So Janmashtami is unlimited. And unlimited devotees, demigods can celebrate. We take that opportunity to show people how they can, just place Krishna in the centre, especially by those five very powerful activities. We see that, young and old, people from all walks of life, they all enjoy very attracted to Krishna. So Prabhupada says, you know, placing Krishna in the center, that is how one goes back to Godhead, by always thinking of Krishna. And that's the motto on Srila Prabhupada's BTG, that Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. Where there is sunlight, there can be no darkness. And Srila Prabhupada adds this. He says, rather we shall always walk very freely in the bright sunshine of Krishna. So you see, you know, Prabhupada travelled all over the world, always, you know, head high, you know, devotees, with his cane, like that, you know. He's not like, you know, wake up in the morning, and oh, there's so many devotees. And if someone was morose, Prabhupada would say, go in the closet. So Queen Kunti, of course, she's praying that Krishna continue to be with her and the Pandavas. And she doesn't want Krishna to leave. Now, that brings up, you know, another aspect of being Krishna conscious. Prabhupada discusses that, you know, Shastra says that actually Krishna never even goes one step out of Vrindavan. There's no question of that he left, or you know, he's so attached to his devotees. He's so attached to Vrindavan. So, although Krishna apparently left, he was always there in the hearts and minds of the Prajavasis. And the same for Queen Kunti. Although he apparently left, he was always with her in his thought, in her thoughts. And in this way, the devotees of the Lord, even when Krishna appears to be separate, he's actually, they always feel that he's present. Because actually in separation, Krishna's presence can be felt even more strongly. So, now this is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Srila Prabhupada explains, of course, something very highly philosophical. You know, it's the extreme summit of transcendental spiritual experience. Something very, very difficult, impossible for, you know, most people. We see that even Brahma and other demigods, they struggled to understand even Krishna's childhood pastimes. They struggled to understand the immense potency of Krishna and his pastimes. What to speak of, you know, entering into the pastimes of Krishna and those devotees experiencing love in separation. Very, very, even great demigods fail. You know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as we know, there is the Astakalya Leela, which very advanced devotees meditate upon at the eightfold different times of the day, meditating on Krishna's eternal eightfold Leela, daily Leela. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his writings, allowed us also to enter into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eightfold daily Leela, which is supposed to be recited first before one recites the or meditates upon the Astakalya Leela of Krishna. And he says there that this meditation on Lord Chaitanya's Leela or Krishna's Leela is not understood by Brahma, Shiva, great demigods, or enunciation. But despite that, the devotees of the Lord are always meditating upon this Krishna Leela. And therefore he offers his obeisances to that Leela. That Leela is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, but it is an aspect of the Supreme Lord in the most confidential understanding. So he offers his obeisances. If one can have the thoughts of Krishna, the thoughts of Krishna Leela, just where even, you know, the thoughts of meditating on even Lord Varaha, that is, the presence of Krishna is there. So we offer our obeisances to that Leela. That means that Krishna's blessing is there, the devotee's blessings is there. If one is not spiritually blessed, then it's not possible to understand or meditate upon, you know, these. Just the fact that we are here, even here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is a sign of extreme blessings, you know, on the spiritual path, that allows us to, you know, sit and hear this, you know, Leela of Lord Varaha. That means Krishna is present. If Krishna is present, it is extremely, you know, merciful. So that Prabhupada mentions. So Lord Chaitanya's teaching is very, very elevated, and he mentions that. Prabhupada says, when we shall see everything as zero, but have only Krishna consciousness, we shall have attained the highest perfection. So that highest, so we see, we only perceive our Krishna consciousness, that's our whole existence. And apart from that, there's nothing. That's the elevated platform of it. Then you'll have attained perfection. And of course, this is why we worship the gopis, because, you know, and the Brajabasis, because they're on that platform. That, you know, as Lord Chaitanya says, in their mood, you know, even a moment seems like 12 years or more. So, Prabhupada says that there are two stages of meeting Krishna. One, being personally present with Krishna. That means you're personally talking to him and you're embracing him like that. That is called Sambhoga. The second way, which is called Vipralamba, is to be with him in separation from him. And Srila Prabhupada says that a devotee can benefit from Krishna's association in both ways. So, of course, you know, we're present with Krishna through the deity. We worship the deity of the Lord, Shishi Radha Balabha, Shishi Gaunatai, Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, Shri Narasimha Dev, Shalagram Shilas, Tawak Shila, Govardhan Shila. We're present with the Lord and his great devotees, Srila Prabhupada, and we can benefit like that. But we can also be present with Krishna in separation. So we follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood that, in one sense, we're in this material world. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, that, you know, somehow I have fallen into this cycle of birth and death. Please pick me up. And that's what we're asking as well. You know, just as Varaha swept into the Garbhodaka ocean and picked up the earth, you please, I'm not even a speck of dust compared to the earth. Surely you can pick me up and place me at your lotus feet like that. So that is our prayer as well. But somehow we're in the material world. Therefore, we're always feeling that separation. Prabhupada says, if one becomes spiritually advanced, then even while they're in the material world, apparently separated from the Lord, everywhere they look, they see Krishna. And that is given in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, that, you know, so many different examples. You know, the sun is considered the eye of all the planets. or the eye of the Lord. And when we see, when God sees. So by the sun and the moon, they become his eyes in this material world. And because he sees, because the sun and the moon manifest and begin to illuminate, we also see. So when we look at the sun, and Krishna says in the Gita that I am the light of the sun, I am the light of the moon, like that, and all the luminaries. And a nice example here Prabhupada gives it about the ocean. Now, of course, you know, we're about you know, a couple of blocks from the ocean there, but we never really we never sort of, you know, tiptoe into the temple, you know, sort of fearful that, you know, that ocean is so powerful. We understand, by Krishna's order, it will remain back there. Krishna has given his order, and Krishna is here, and the ocean is there, and never the two shall meet. Like that. Although Prabhupada did say once that, you know, even in Melbourne, this whole city could be washed away in a second by a big wave. You know, Prabhupada said that. So it's possible, but it doesn't come. So when we, you know, look at the ocean, we perceive that the ocean is staying there by the order of the Supreme. So a devotee is seeing everything like that. If they're in that mood of Krishna consciousness to a significant degree, then everything they see, they're actually developing that mood, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, of feeling Krishna's presence in separation. And that mood, as they feel that separation, of course they chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And the amazing thing is, Prabhupada says that actually Krishna's presence can be felt even more strongly in that mood of separation. So that sort of makes, in one sense, our opportunity in the material world something very special. There's an opportunity. You know, Lord Chaitanya didn't go to Vaikuntha to experience the mood of Vipralamba. He came to the material world. You know, so there is a great opportunity there. And so Srila Prabhupada taught us, of course, that people try to see God, but we should see the Lord by the method that the Lord himself, by which Krishna gives us. Krishna gives us a process. If you follow this process, that is how you see me. And Prabhupada would say, you know, don't go, you know, sort of trying to find Krishna somewhere in the bushes of Vrindavan, you know, but you know, you serve your spiritual master. You know, you follow the instructions of the spiritual master to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, follow the rules and regulations, avoid the 10 offences, you know, engage in preaching, and always hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and associating with devotees, and putting on so many festivals. You know, if you serve the Lord in that way, then you will see the Supreme Lord, because by bhakti, because in the Gita, Krishna says, only by bhakti can you know me as I am, can you see me as I am. So that process, of course, we know that that process of bhakti, we take shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and his representatives, his followers, his books, and by that process, one will definitely be able to perceive Krishna. In the very preface, in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that by the end of, I think, is it nine chapters or end of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, but I think it's even, I'm not even sure if it's the whole Bhagavatam, even, you know, by nine cantos, one should be sufficiently God realized. Therefore, so our prayer that just as, you know, we fix in our mind, Lord Bohr picked up the entire earth. This is Krishna. This is Krishna. Krishna is showing us. You know, because he appears as a cowherd boy, but, you know, he hides his nature as his unlimited potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even, you know, personalities like Lord Brahma, they look and they think, you know, that's, is that God? I've heard it's God, you know, I've been told it's God, but, you know, I can't see the potency. Just a little boy with a little food in his hand running around barefoot. And that, very, very difficult to understand. But, so Krishna, in various ways, like he appeared before Mother Devaki. I've shown you my forearm form, so you understand I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, if he appeared as a baby, you know, he wanted to understand, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and for many births you have worshipped, to have a child, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead as your child. I am that Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'm showing you my forearm form, otherwise you will not understand. But actually, and here as Lord Varaha, he's, you know, picking up the earth to show us. You know, we are sunk. You know, you think the Garbhodaka ocean is so very deep. What about the depths of our heart? Millions and millions of years of material desires and so much murky stuff in the heart, you know, a bit deeper than the Garbhodaka ocean, practically unlimited. You know, where is the bottom to that? And somewhere in that heart is a tiny little spirit soul lost. Varaha, get in there. Find me, wake me up, and, you know, put me back like that. So, anyway, I'll just leave it there. Anyone has any comments or questions? Well, you know, how the mood of the gopis and the Brajavasis is an exalted mood, and it's not, you know, it sometimes appears like maybe an enjoying mood, and, you know, Kudja, you know, there was, you know, some element of lust apparently like that. Is there a teaching to Queen Kunti? So, with regards to Kubja, there's Kubja, there's the queens of Vrindavan, and there is the gopis. Each of them is attracted to Krishna in somewhat of a conjugal relationship. But to some degree, not materially, but there may be a sense of their own spiritual happiness. So it's not material lust, but there may be some degree of their own spiritual bliss. From Krishna's happiness. But progressively from Kudja, the queens of Vrindavan and the gopis, you know, when you get to the gopis, they have no sense of what happiness and distress is. There's no concept of their own personal happiness and distress. It doesn't even register. Only Krishna's happiness registers. So it may register to some degree with the queens of Dwarka. Therefore, when Krishna, you know, was joking with Rukmini, You know, she was, you know, she fainted with the thought that Krishna may leave. He was joking. You could have got a better husband than me. And yeah, Hindi? Yeah, okay. Can you find text 39? And you see in the purport somewhere, it's only a couple of pages, but in the purport there, it's one of the later chapters. It's called, it's the last couple of chapters. Krishna's very beautiful, is one of the chapters called. Right, it's towards the end. So you'll find in that purport there, there's a little bit about how the gopis meditated upon Krishna when he went to the forest. I want that part. It's somewhere towards the... there's only a few pages in it, so you'll be able to find it. But, you know, so we see comparatively that, you know, with even Rukmini, that... you know, there was a sense of awe, you know, and that Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that, you know, her relationship, because of that tinge of awe, a little bit of transcendental fear or anxiety, you found it? You know, with the gopis, you know, we see that they had no concept of their own happiness or distress. You know, their thoughts of Krishna was only Krishna's happiness. Their whole life revolved around Krishna's happiness, no concept like that. So, you know, although it's all on the transcendental platform, but the intensity of that mood is more intense. So, you know, something is considered to be thicker or thinner. You know, when something is very thick, you know, you can't even drive a nail through it. Nothing can penetrate that mood. So the gopi's mood is the thickest mood, you know, more concentrated and powerful. Although that same mood is there within the queens of Vrindavan and Kubja, but it is a little thinner. Other things may enter, other concepts like that. But although it's all on the spiritual platform, so it's not lust. But in regard to Kubja, because, you know, she approached Krishna, you know, with lust, there is a strong warning to people who approach Krishna with an enjoying mood. Be very, very careful not to do that. Very dangerous on the spiritual platform. So, you know, try and... You know, Kubja was... she's an expansion of Bhu Shakti, who's an expansion of Satyabhama. You know, they're not ordinary personalities. They're not material personalities. But still, because there's an apparent strong sense of lust that we may take in a material way, there's a strong warning. Don't approach Krishna with that enjoying mood. But actually, you know, these are all spiritual pastimes. But I'll just read this little bit here, just to how the gopis thought of Krishna. Just to answer your question. Okay. So, in fact, Krishna was not leaving the Pandavas just as he never left Vrindavan. In the Shastra, the Vedic literature, it is said, Vrindavanam parityajya paramikam nagacchati. Krishna never goes even one step from Vrindavan. He is so much attached to Vrindavan. How is it then that we see that Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura and then far away to Hastinapur and did not return for many years? Actually, Krishna did not leave, for all the inhabitants of Vrindavan after Krishna left were always thinking of him and crying. The only engagement of Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Radharani and all the gopis, cows, calves and cowherd boys, was to think of Krishna and cry, and in this way they felt Krishna to be present. Because Krishna's presence can be felt more strongly in separation from him. So then when we see everything is nothing but have only Krishna consciousness, we shall have attained the highest perfection. Therefore the gopis were so exalted. Having attained this perfection, they could not forget Krishna even for a single moment. When Krishna went to the forest with his cows and calves, the minds of the gopis at home were disturbed. Oh, Krishna is walking barefoot, they thought. There are so many stones and nails on the path, and they must be pricking Krishna's lotus feet, which is so soft that we think our breast hard when Krishna puts his lotus feet upon them. Thus they would cry, absorbed in these thoughts. The gopis were so anxious to see Krishna back home in the evening that they would stand on the path looking to see Krishna returning with the calves and cows. This is Krishna consciousness. So you see here, you know, the gopis used to place Krishna's lotus feet on his breast, and it's a conjugal mood. But you see, you know, the inner intention is, you know, the care of Krishna's lotus feet. That, you know, they're thinking that, you know, they could barely, the thought that Krishna is walking barefoot, maybe something might hurt his, you know, lotus feet. And then they're thinking, you know, but, you know, when we see him, we place his feet, lotus feet on our breast, and then they're thinking, even that's, you know, that'd be too hard, you know, like this. So it's Krishna's happiness. It's Krishna's happiness, you know, even within the conjugal mood. So if you look at all of the activities of the gopis, even though it appears to be in a mood that they're enjoying Krishna, their only ever thought is actually Krishna's happiness, even though it's done in the conjugal mood. See? So there's an example there. Huh? Okay, so I'll just leave it there. Any other questions? Or, thank you. Sorry, all good, Srila Prabhupada.